D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5. The Game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen here with you. Let's go to our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Trevor Maddich, who is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, we were just talking about the NFL draft. We are getting started early around here, and we were talking about a conversation we were having yesterday with Teron Davenport. We asked him which players is he hearing are in the, you know, in the Titans' sights, so to speak, at number four. He mentioned three defensive prospects. He also mentioned Carnell Tate, but let's focus on the three defensive prospects: Arvell Reese, David Bailey, and Reuben Bain. Based on what you know of those players, you know a hell of a lot more than we do, and based on the defense that Robert Saleh prefers to run, which of those three players do you think is the best fit for the Titans if they were to choose from that group?
If I were to put them in order, Adam, I would say number one, Arvell Reese, linebacker, Ohio State. Number two, Reuben Bain, Miami edge rusher and defensive lineman, and those two would be very close to me. And number three, I would put David Bailey, the edge rusher out of Texas Tech. The reason I love Arvell Reese is that he can run sideline to sideline and clean up everything that the defensive line spills to him. One of the things that Robert Saleh's defenses like to do is play one gap with the defensive line, eat up offensive linemen as they're trying to stop that penetration, and then let the linebackers flow to run and hit and make plays. And Reese is a guy that can go sideline to sideline doing that. But you can also line him up in different places. I mean, you can put him on the edge as an edge rusher if you want, but you can also use him like Micah Parsons has been used, which is to say, identify the weakest pass blocker, whether he's a guard or a center or a tackle, and on a passing down, put Reese in there. You know, it hurt my heart for the offensive lineman. Like, you'll take Parsons and put him in over, say, the right guard. In a passing down, you know he was going to rush over that guard. You knew that guard is not an athletic guy. That's why he's in there at guard instead of at a tackle. And you would see Reese burst to one side of the guard. The guard would do his maximum best to try to get out there in front of him. And then Parsons would burst inside to the other gap, and the guard wasn't athletic enough to get inside to stop that counter move. And Arvell Reese is a guy that can do that at any position on the offensive line that they think is the weakest in terms of protection. So there's so much versatility that he has in terms of being a disruptive playmaker, and I just love what he can do. But the reason I like Reuben Bain as second to that is because Bain is an every down defensive end who is an elite pass rusher and also an outstanding run stuffer. So he's a guy that will be going after the quarterback every single time that it's a pass because he's got his hand in the dirt down there, whereas Reese might be dropping into coverage a lot in addition to rushing. And so I think Bain is one of the best pure pass rushers because he's got a great first step. He's got heavy hands, meaning that when the offensive tackle goes to punch him, Bain is able to just dominate those arms and hands of the tackle as they come out to try to punch. And he's got every move imaginable that a college pass rusher can be expected to have. And so he's not just a one-trick pony. Then he's got just a fantastic motor. So those two guys would be the first two that I would take. And if you flip them and you happen to like Bain better than Reese, it wouldn't bother me. I think Reese is a less dangerous pick that high because the one thing that people say about Bain is that he's got short arms. I don't see any limitation of that in his play at the college level. I don't think there'd be limitations at the pro level either. But at least when you talk about the real reason that general managers draft who they draft, it's not to improve the team. It's not to win the Super Bowl. It's so they don't get fired. And the safer pick between Bain and Reese is Reese because of that.
So why wouldn't David Bailey, in your mind, be a scheme fit for Robert Saleh?
David Bailey, I think, is I don't want to say a one-trick guy. He's very much a specialist. He is an outstanding, elite edge rusher. I mean, he's got an explosive burst off the line that breaks down an offensive tackle's pass rush set, or excuse me, pass block set, before he even has a chance to get his hands on Bailey. He's just so quick with that first step. And then he also has, like Bain, a tremendous repertoire of moves and counter moves and counters off of the counters. He's just a joy to watch. And that's good. But the thing is, whereas Bain's 6'3", I think, about 285, Bailey's 6'3", about 250. And Bain is an outstanding run defender. Bailey he's not a liability as a run defender, but you worry about him. And if you're on offense, you're running right at him as often as you can and making him defend the run just to beat his body down so that he, as the game wears on, he's kind of a little worn out when he goes to try to rush the passer. Bain doesn't have that problem. When it comes to just being a linebacker, if you use him as a linebacker, he's not great. He's great as an elite pass rusher. But so is Bain. So is Reese. But those two guys can also be three down guys that can take on anything the offense wants to throw at them.
Now, with that being said, Trevor, we're talking with Trevor Maddich, NFL and college analyst for ESPN. Now, when you say that, do you think that those two guys will be gone before the Titans pick fourth? Now, we assume that, you know, the Vegas Raiders will draft Mendoza, but then you got two spots before that, before the Titans draft. So do you think, you know, Arvell Reese and Bain will be gone? And if so, you know, do you think the Titans do, you know, take somebody like David Bailey, knowing that he's just he's a hell of an outside rusher, but that's what his specialty is?
Yeah, I think, Derek, that there's a good chance Reese won't be there. I mean, you look at Mel Kiper's latest mock draft, he's got Reese going to the Jets at number two. You know, the Jets have an awful lot of needs, and it's kind of unfortunate that Dante Moore, the quarterback for Oregon, decided to return to college because the Jets may have taken him at number two, which would have bounced Reese down another spot. The Cardinals, Mel has him taking Francis Maui-Noah, who's the offensive tackle of Miami, and that would be great for the Titans if they did, because even if Arvell Reese is gone by the time the Titans pick at four, that leaves Bailey and Bain available at number four. And I kind of think that both of them will be available if they do take Bailey. I'm not saying it's bad. What I'm saying is that they've got to maximize what he does best and not put him out in a position to where offenses can dictate that he has to play in the style that he doesn't do best. But at number four, I'd be surprised if Bain's not there, because I think enough people will be afraid of his arm length that they'll forget to watch the film.
Now, did the Super Bowl, we're going to switch over to the NFL now, did the game go the way you expected, or were some things that happened within the game, you know, made you wonder, well, had they done this, then maybe this would have happened, or if they had not done that, either team?
Yeah, it started out the way I expected. I thought it would be a defensive battle, and certainly it was. It was 9-0 in the first half, you know, and then the Seahawks added a field goal in the third quarter, and then things kind of broke loose later in the game. What was different was that I expected Patriots quarterback Drake May to play better than he did. I mean, Drake May completely melted down. He was awful. Now, I get it. In the first half, both sides were playing to not make that big mistake. And then we got into, you know, the third quarter, and time is running out. Seattle is ahead. They were up 12-0 at the end of three. And now Drake May is having to press, because now the clock's running out. Even though the Patriots defense had kept Seattle out of the end zone up until that point, they were still down 12-0 entering the fourth quarter. And then three Drake May turnovers led to two touchdowns and a field goal for Seattle. One of those was that it's either an interception, pick six, or it's a fumble, scoop and score, depending on how they scored it. I still don't know how they scored it, but that was May trying to do too much. It was the fourth quarter. He was trailing. He's watching that clock tick down. He dropped back to pass, pressure coming from the right. He backed up towards the left, and as he was hit by the pressure, he still tried to heave the ball deep down the field to a covered receiver on the right sideline. It was just a, you know, it was just a, I don't even know what it was. But, you know, that was the one that the ball popped up in the air, and Seattle grabbed it and ran for a touchdown. So I didn't expect May to make so many dumb decisions in the second half, even though he was trying to come back. And I didn't expect him to miss as many open receivers as he did, because there were opportunities, especially in that third quarter, where he had open guys and he did have time, and he just flat missed them. He threw it towards them, but he just flat missed them. There weren't that many opportunities because of the Seahawks pass rush, but when May had the opportunities, he didn't take advantage of them. When Darnold had the opportunities, he did.
Trevor Maddux is with us from ESPN. Trevor, we were doing a discussion yesterday on what can you learn from how the Seahawks built their team, because it's kind of unique in that they don't have a quarterback who was drafted with a first-round pick that they built around in sort of the traditional way. They were a bit unorthodox, some bold trades, trading a couple of quarterbacks to get assets. What, if anything, could you think of that comes to mind that the Titans could learn from how the Seahawks built themselves?
Willie, I think that you make a great point about the quarterback. I mean, they didn't draft Sam Darnold high in the first round, trading up to get him, did they? You know, the Jets are the ones that drafted him high in the first round. And he fell to the Seahawks. And while all that was going on, the Seahawks had, you know, they had let go of Russell Wilson. They brought in Geno Smith. He was pretty good, but they figured he had too low of a ceiling. And so they waited for the right quarterback, and they figured that might be Darnold. In the meantime, Seattle was building that team from the inside out. They assembled a defensive line that could get pressure on the quarterback and stop the run without bringing safeties out of the backfield. That allowed them to play two and three deep safeties a lot, sometimes even four, in various different kinds of coverages. That made it almost impossible for teams to hit big plays on them, right? And then that defensive front would go get the quarterback. And so they built that. They built a good offensive line. They invested draft capital in Jackson Smith and Jigba, who in his third year, I think it was the offensive player of the year. So they got an elite playmaker that forced defenses to game plan for him, which opened things up for the tight end and for other receivers. Cooper Kupp, you know, they were able to take advantage of defenses focusing on Smith and Jigba, and they still couldn't stop Jackson Smith and Jigba. And so then when the quarterback came in, the rest of the team around Seattle was ready to go. And that's huge. Now, for the Titans, well, they used the first pick in the draft on the quarterback. Okay. But I think what this really, I think Drake May's experience in the Super Bowl is something that can inform the Titans going forward into free agency in the draft, because the Patriots defense held Seattle out of the end zone until the fourth quarter. That meant that Drake May did not have to press, and he didn't make the big mistake. Even though they didn't move the ball down there and score it all, they still didn't make the big mistake until in the fourth quarter, Drake May had to open it up and take more chances, and that's when Seattle blew the game open. So what does that mean for the Titans? It means that you can help Cam Ward by drafting a receiver up high. That, I wouldn't mind that. But if you draft the right defender up high, you can do what basically Seattle did for Darnold and what the Patriots defense did for May in the first three quarters, which is to say, hold the score down so your quarterback doesn't have to press and he doesn't have to put himself and the ball at risk. And to me, that's the biggest lesson about how they built their team that the Titans can learn from, because, you know, not investing a high draft pick in the quarterback, that horse is out of the barn.
Right.
You know, they already did that with Cam Ward. But from a standpoint now of how do you help Cam Ward? Well, if the defense means that, you know, is so good that he doesn't have to press, then he doesn't put himself in the position to make as many mistakes. A lot of good things happen from a confidence standpoint, from winning games standpoint, et cetera. And so I think that's the lesson that the Titans should take from the Super Bowl. Build that defense to help your quarterback.
This is an observation that Adam had yesterday. I wasn't aware of until he said it, but Mike McDonald is the first actual play-calling defensive coach, who's the head coach, to win the Super Bowl. There's been some other defensive-minded head coaches like Bill Belichick, but if you take Belichick out, there's only a handful of others. There's way more offensive-minded coaches or even play-callers that have won Super Bowls than defense. But, of course, we're intrigued here because Robert Saleh is going to do exactly what Mike McDonald is doing in Seattle. Are you surprised it's that imbalanced?
No, I'm not surprised, but it is a little bit of whiplash, I think, for people that, you know, for that watch football more casually. I know you guys watch football with great intensity and you keep up with everything, but I think most people look at the Super Bowl and they think, okay, the teams in the NFL that are successful in the playoffs and successful in the Super Bowl, yeah, their defenses can play, but it's the offenses. There's been so much emphasis on quarterbacks in the passing game, in part because of rule changes that favor the quarterbacks in the passing game. And that elite side of the ball with the little skill guys is where you win. Excuse me. And this Super Bowl, I think, and this playoff run, because so many of the top 10 defenses were in the playoffs this year. I think 8 of the top 10 were in the playoffs. This showed everybody that defense is back, if it ever left. And so this emphasis on taking advantage of rule changes with quarterbacks and great receivers, et cetera, that's all interesting, but it's still the defense that's going to win. And in the case of the Seahawks, defense and the running game. The MVP was their running back, Kenneth Walker. And so the Seattle Seahawks partied like it's 1979 to win the 2026 Super Bowl.
Trevor Maddich has been our guest on D-Mace Vingan and Adonik. He joins us every Tuesday and is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, as always, appreciate your insight. We'll catch up next week.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks, guys.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, there was a headline today that when I saw it, I had to take off my glasses, wipe them off, put them back on, and make sure I was actually reading what I was reading. It happened at the Olympics. We'll tell you about it next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.